Reel 16.
Now, he said, I want to see this. He says, how are you going to get in there? He says, you know Binns is there. I said, so I believe. I said, I don't want to see Binns. I said, I want to see my Aunt Sophia. Well, he was away with us. He didn't ask any more questions, so he must have told that was the truth I was telling. He says, right, he says, make a bargain with you. He says, you go there, come back here. He says, show me the new shoes. He says, if you don't, I'll pull every tooth out. Then I wouldn't have pushed past him because he was horrible, man. In any case, Ireland's in there, I thought, oh, we'll stopped about four times. And every time I was sort of walking in a daze and saying, I'm going to see my Aunt Sophia, Sophia Meyer, in the tailor shop. Go on, Ireland. And then they opened this wooden fence, which was private, making a sort of a private way from all those paddocks that were behind this wooden fence. And I called Sophia Meyer. Sophia Meyer, it was a courtyard, you see. And the windows were open, yes. And who comes in view is Binns. And I thought, oh God, this is the end. And she comes with her whip, clashing her whip, I can see it now, against her boots, you see, very slowly walking up. A dog on the lead, walking behind her. And I thought, oh, that's it, this is near. And she is about, what, 5 meters away from me. A voice says, 'tis mine. And it was Sophia. It's all been two, something like that. I know this girl, all right. And she says, well, how are you? I said, I've come for a pair of shoes. I said, look. Oh, good gracious. She said, take them off, and it was cold. I stood there, and my feet were absolutely frozen. She took these shoes, and she came back with a brand new pair. Absolutely. Well, it saved my mother's life. She says, go on, and I was that dog for it. I had him in my hand, you see. I said, thank you very much. And she says, go on, put them on. I'd forgotten. I was going to walk away. Like that, with shoes in my hand. And the Binns even was stood there, and she was absolutely dumbstruck that she gave me. I don't know what the situation was between all these people there, but in any case, she never protested anything against this one. She seemed to be on top of her for some reason or other. And Binns said to me, don't you come back again. Well, I thought, never mind, I'll come back again. I walked straight in the Riviera and went straight past everybody. I said, the doctor dentist is expecting me. Now I went in. He sat behind his desk. See, now I've got my mum. He says, well, and he sort of stood up. He was rather tall, man. He says, I can't believe it. I said, you've lost your bet. I said, may I go now? He says, get out and never come back again. And I went out to my cousin mum. You know the whole situation for many, many. I think actually I told her after it came out in conversation when we went to one of the reunions.
You were very assertive. I mean, you've said explained very many incidents like this. You know, did it take a lot of courage to do that sort of thing, or did it come naturally to you? Because you do seem to have been amazingly assertive as such a young person. Did you do it consciously? You know, was it a conscious way of...
It was my reaction, I suppose. Because I very often say, when you have the time to think all these things over, I'm sure you wouldn't do half of them.
So it was a natural response
reaction,
to you?
Yes. I do know that I mustn't make that too public. Now, you, I suppose it doesn't, it won't happen again in my lifetime, I hope not. But I did discover my weaknesses.
What were they?
If they would have, instead of hitting me, the more they hit me, the more stubborn, the more hatred I gave back. If they would have put me in a room with a noise, unbearable noise, I don't know what to do. Because that's something that comes up there. It's amazing, you know. You go, I'm ever so glad you've asked me that, because you can't always relieve yourself of many situations like that, and you think sometimes. Now, as I taught over the years, that's why probably I was even told sometimes by my husband, and I would say, oh, now then I remember something. Oh, he says, oh, for goodness sake, you're beginning to imagine it. And I used to be offended when he used to say that, and then I used to think, no, it's too clear, I'm not imagining. But I always wanted to go back to the camp once more. And of course, the opportunity is very expensive as well. And then, of course, it was out of the blue, his invitation came. Linton invited me over, the Prime Minister, Dr. Scopel of Vanderbilt, and I was very nervous in the beginning, but in any case I accepted it and I thought, right. And I went, and I'm very glad that I went. I've never abandoned the German language. I had my mind right from the beginning. I still understand everything, but I can't speak it anymore, which I regret. I found that regret now. I went back. To me, the camp has altered, because only 15 months ago, until then, the Russians were still living there with their families. So they broke everything down and rebuilt everything. There are certain places, I don't know how other people reacted, but of course, to me, it's still the camp. But instead of looking, which I was looking at a concrete block, I was forever seeing everything exactly as it was 50 years ago. I could recognize different things. Came back so vividly, I discovered the last day. I took this woman another way around the camp, and I told her where there was a little man's camp, and she was astounded, and she was working for the historical society in Germany, and she says, you know, you're only the second person that ever, it's been denied that there was a man's camp. I said, I will never deny it, I'm sure I'm not the only survivor. Now, I must tell you that on the 23rd, I'm sorry I have to cut it short, but on the 23rd of April, he started, Himmler had made the factories kind of exchange. Four or five of prisoners of war for one prisoner of war, the Germans. That was the last time. they came with what they call white buses, the cross buses, and deliberately we were brought. Siemens, from the little camp, was closed down. All the machineries were taken away. One that the old guard told me, don't worry, Atencia, he whispered to me, Belgium is free, it won't be long before the creek is 30, before the war is over. That was another thing. We were all taken to the big camp. And there was a selection, you see, by Rio Britney's song in the selection. And all this palaver of the Red Cross buses are waiting outside. But, you know, those that went in it knew they were going in it. So I'll give you the guess of the story. So. But every time they called out, and they called out, they called the French, they called the Dutch, and the Swedish, and the Denmark, and the Norwegian, and all that stuff. And the 23rd, the 24th, and the 25th, they were still evacuating with these red buses. And every time, after the end of the day, we had to go back. Till in the end, I should think about 80 of us were left. And then they marched us one day through the end of the Lagerstrasse, through a little door leading into a gangway made up by electric barbed wire, a good way around, and eventually we came onto a spot where there was two barracks surrounded by electric fence, guarded by two old soldiers. They locked us in there, and they were unusually barracks, not the barracks like we knew. They were individual rooms with a stove in, wasn't working of course, and one bunk. So somehow they must have been either for soldiers or whatever. Whatever it had been used for, I thought first of all it was panic station because the windows had been broken and the windows were replaced by wooden planks. And it was definitely gas. You smelled. It reeked. The gas had penetrated in the wood, it reeked. And of course it was panic and we were locked into this. We couldn't get out. A sort of blind wall on the back with no thing. They locked us in and they said we had to wait there. Well, of course nobody wanted to go in these rooms. So a lot slept outside on the thing. Didn't know what was going to happen to us. But of course, Mum, there were some. My mum said that she got all the boards off, and I must have been happy a lot after birth, I don't know, but there wasn't much response. And at a moment like that, there was always one of us that sort of booked the other one up, you see. But I must have been ill or something again. I was on the end. And when it was aired a little bit, it was a bit better. But I slept and slept and slept. And apparently we were there for, I think, about 2 or 3 days. We could hear the guns and the fighting, which was coming close all the time. And those poor guards couldn't only be threatening some of those that were still in a better condition. You see, because all of those that were there together in those two barracks, we went and did the journey to Sweden together. And there are still quite a few alive. On the road, we picked some others up, of course, because it was chaos. Mm.
Was that before the camp was liberated? When you left for Sweden,
we must have been about one of the last ones to move from the western side.
But had the Ravensbrück been liberated then?
No. And they took us. We had no food. We had nothing to drink, and there was panic beginning. But it must have been so devastating that the guard came and unlocked the chains, and they opened it and said we could go out. Well, we had to walk all the length of the camp, of the Lagerstrasse. When we came to the gate, we didn't know what was going to happen, because we didn't know what was going on. The gates were open, you couldn't see a German, But apparently all those that were in the hospitals and in the referee, and all the all those that were very ill, the others had gone out and been flagged on what they call a death march. Right? So those that were left were all inside the barracks, which we couldn't see. And I suppose if it would have come to the conclusion, we wouldn't have cared, because it was everybody for themselves that point. We walked out and he told us, whoever told us, to sit there on this verge, on this grass verge, in front of those wheels that I'd first seen, and wait for help. Well, we spent the night, the day there, and we spent the night there. And by then, I should imagine it was about 27 or 28, which I've always said, we were liberated. And a little car with the Danish, the Swedish flag on the front of the bonnet. And by then we didn't trust anybody. And they said, and funny enough, amongst us there was about, we were all Belgians, and there was about 10 Jews that disguised themselves. Probably exchanged with the dead bodies, the Belgian club. And they were amongst us. And we sat there and some of us went to sleep. Hours went in any case. And I thought we were just left here. We could hear the close noise. And he had sat in this little car, was one of the officers. And he says, I promise you, come and fetch you. He didn't know he was still somewhere, you see. He must have come to have a check or something for some reason. And we thought that was just one of those things. And it took about 2 days before he came back. And he did come back with lorries, army lorries. And I keep insisting to that, we went out at the camp in army lorries with a tarp pole. Green camouflage and a trap over the top and a back, you know, because I couldn't climb up. And my mother, I don't know where the veggies came from, and I said, I can't come up there, can't walk up there, but stay here. And she pulled me by my little hair that was there, with one hand, and pulled me just on top, before I realised what had happened. And I'd already, she just happened to be a Jewish girl, of course. And she accidentally, I don't think it was on purpose, but she kicked my right leg and it was open again, wasn't it? And my mother had her in a corner on that bed, so shame of you. And nobody, I had plenty of space after that. Nobody dare come near me. Because she said, you know, all the blood was everywhere. It lasted about, you see, when that happened, it took about 6 months before anything would hear. See, because there was no resistance in the body at all. I prayed. If only we could have done another week in the camp, I would have been willing to sacrifice for what we went through on that journey. It was just indescribable. They took us right in, well, they had orders what to do and where to go. They had to keep to the main road. We were used as decoys. The roads, the main roads, in the middle of the fighting, the Americans, the British, the Russians on the other side, and the Germans, and the last stand of the SS. And we were right in the middle of this, all the way, with the German army that was running away behind us and in front of us, and we were machine gun. We started out with roughly, I can't exactly remember, that's where I should have written it down. Just after the war. We had an awful lot of loss. And I don't even believe that my sister still got the first letter that I was allowed to send to Belgium. Incidentally, which was what you call it? You were
censored. Yes, censored.
You have to be careful. But you were told that in Sweden. And I did put a little bit on in there. And I don't believe now, after all these years, it must have been right with the same, but I state a statement how many of us stayed on the way. And it was 400 of them that died, machine gun. All the first lorries, they were all burned. On each lorry had two drivers, a relief driver and stuff. And they were conscientious subjects. Very nice boys, risking their lives to do that sort of work. But all right, if they didn't want to fight, but at least they were doing something.
What nationality were they?
They were Swedish.
They were all Swedes, were they?
Yes. And they were in uniform. They all lost their lives except one. And he promised we were near a wood. And he told us that we must go in the wood and stay there. And he promised us sincerely that he was coming back with us, which he did. Don't know how long. It rained, and it was like broad daylight in the middle of the night because of the fighting. And the Russians were, by then, had liberated, because the following day, I believe, they entered Travisbrück. So they were still fighting. Berlin was already a long time liberated, you see. So all this, we were still left somewhere in that pocket. The law was, or the original agreement that Can Bernadotte made with Himmler, they had to travel a certain route. They were not allowed to travel at night. We had to travel in broad daylight. Yes, because he could use it. And we had to stay on the route and sleep byways or whatever else to be. Then start again when the light came on. Now, it took us 4 or 5 days before eventually we arrived in Denmark, which was a completely different route as we were going to. We were going to Lübeck. When we arrived in Lübeck, it was burning. All the ships were burning, so they went back. And then we had lost all the same back of vessels in this wood, with new lorries. We lost on the second day, we lost half of those, and some more of our friends that had been in the... They survived the concentration camp for 2 and 3 years, and then they go and die on the road. And in any case, the boys, the drivers said, right, that's it now. We're going to break all the rules. We're going to sleep in the daytime or rest in the daytime in the woods in the night. And we're traveling by night, of course, it's very difficult because you couldn't have your lights on. Those that were incapable of walking by then. Some were wounded as well. We had those sisters. They stayed in the lorries. And whoever could hinkle or were walking on the side and on front of these lorries. I don't know how these lads made it. In the pitch dark with a tiny little light, and if we heard something, you see the light went up. And that's how we made it to the border. Somewhere in the wilds. Now, if you can just imagine that scene, I can't believe sometimes things are what your reaction is. It was one of those divisions that, unless you knew the that you were in another country, you would never have thought that would be similar to when you cross certain borders in Belgium into France or into Holland or even into Germany. You don't know if you're crossing the border, if it is in the woods or whatever, but this was a similar occasion. But nevertheless, the Red Cross was waiting on the other side in Denmark. And it was very steep, and you could see in the distance all the trees. This was Germany, you see. And there was this orderly barrier, like an old station, you see, and opened and you closed pole. And of course, the Red Cross was waiting on the other side, and there was a barn, and they filled that with fresh straw, and outside they put trestle tables, and there was bowls on it, and of course, later on they filled. Now we were on the soil. And you know, we didn't realize still that Denmark was still occupied. We didn't know that. We thought we were in. And at one point, I remember looking to my mom, and she was looking at me, and I said, are we going down to the what? And at that point, everybody started laughing with themselves. We were making the most childish, putting our tongues out, putting our hands in our ears, to nobody. It was to Germany. We were doing that. The most stupid movements. You know, we couldn't express ourselves enough of the hatred and the stupidity. We realized we stood there so stupid doing it at a field, an open field, with a few trees in the back there. And then they brought us some water. They didn't give us anything to eat. Nobody wanted anything, actually. And we washed. Right, it was this water, put those dirty stinking clothes on again. And then it was, we went and lay on the straw, and we should have moved the following day, but apparently we stayed there, and they let us sleep, and we didn't. We slept on for two days, and then eventually they had to come and wake us. It was just fear reaction, you see. Nobody would wake up. And then they were bosses then, big bosses. And they came and fetched us, missing the Red Cross. The lorries had gone. And they took us to Copenhagen. But first not through Denmark. Took us to Copenhagen. We went, took us to warehouses and to a boat to be disinfected. And on these boats you have to cook around different stages of the boat, and doctors just stand there and disinfect you. Said they gave us the clothes, we could choose shoes and on the clothes and coat. And then we were on the last journey, we eventually were taken to Sweden. And that journey, we thought, that's it now, that's where they're going to kill us. They're going to dump us in the sea. Because after all this, we were on the train, and I don't think any of us had known that a big train like that would go on a boat, on a big ship. And they drove this big train on this big ship, and then they fastened this train on this ship with big chains. And we were all locked in this train. And nobody was allowed, of course, to come out, and the noise, and it was an aircraft attack. And there was the biggest storm on you could wish for, I believe. It's dreadful in there. In any case, they thought, that's it, they're going to dump. Any minute now, they're going to open this hole and like push it straight out, and that's it, that's the end of it. By some miracle, we arrived in Malmö. They took us to a village called Margaret, which was a converted church. Everything was arranged there. And we were in quarantine there for 2 months.
How about your brother and father? Did they survive the war?
They flew us back in Lancaster. two buses. And then we found out that everybody of the family, except my grandpa, he had died just a little bit before. But my father was back. My father had been back because my brother liberated him from Buchenwald and brought him back.
Yes, sure.
The other lorry. And he was back from in April. He didn't come back till the 29th of June to Belgium. And of course, the day I arrived, everybody, and I met my husband to be, and I said, there he was again, right on the doorstep. He had made friends with my father, because the British boys did that, because they used to find out where there was a prisoner coming back, because he knew there was a street party. But in this case, the people he lodged with, or used to go in the evening with some friends of his, they were friends of the family, and that's how he got to know.
Well, Hortense, thank you very much indeed for telling me about some of your World War II experiences. Thank you very much. I know we could go on much longer.